This is your city. This is your city wants to know. We want to know the background, the heartbeat of what makes up our beautiful cities. We dig into the backstories, from the struggles to the successes of our local entrepreneurs, small business owners, artists, not-for-profit organizations, and the many, many people who make up the intricate tapestry of our communities. Real people, real stories, by you and for you.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to another episode of This Is Your City. I am Kim, your host. I am so excited to speak to our guest tonight. Those of you who know, some of you may not know, I love music. Almost any kind of music. I mean, there's some I could listen to, but really not, you know, I wouldn't go out and buy their albums, but I love music. And I heard this woman sing, and I had to know her story. And then I heard her story, which is kind of weird because I saw a little snippet of her. But before I read her whole story, I listened to her song and my heart was melting. It was so beautiful. And then I reached out to her. So I'm so excited that she agreed to be with us today. So tonight, my guest is a singer-songwriter. She's an author. Her name is Heather Hutchinson. I hope I pronounced that right, Heather.
You did, yes.
Yes. Perfect. Now, Heather was born blind, and she had bouts and different seasons where she struggled with depression and anxiety. And I just find that so apropos because so many of us, myself included, have gone through those seasons. And knowing that we're not alone and that there's somebody else that can share their experience is really empowering. But through all of this, Heather discovered how what she likes to call, she turned her pain into purpose. And I love that. With strategies on how to cope with anxiety, how to cope with depression. And tonight she's going to take us through her journey of choosing life. I love that. And later on, I'll have your website and everything, Heather. It's www.heather-hutchinson.com, but I'll have it all up later on. And welcome to the show, Heather. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
I'm so excited to hear your story. And I'm so excited for people to hear your album because I'm truly being serious when I say I loved it. It was
thank you.
Angelic almost, really. So I don't doubt that everybody's going to love it once they hear it. So let's just dive right into it if you don't mind. Your bio talks about finding yourself in a psychiatric facility.
Yes.
So as someone who has maneuvered through depression, whose entire family has suffered and struggled through depression, for the most part, it doesn't always happen that you find yourself in a psychiatric facility. So can you share that with us? Can you tell us how that started?
Yeah, for sure. So my struggles with my mental health started pretty early, probably about 7 or 8. I started getting panic attacks, but I didn't know obviously what they were at the time, which is pretty scary when you're a kid. Mm. And then in my early teens, I got more depressed, probably because of the anxiety, you know, like who wants to feel like that all the time, right? So yeah, so it's been a struggle from a really early age, and I will go through bouts, like major depressive episodes. They can last anywhere from a couple weeks to a couple months to even longer. And then there's times in between where I'm actually doing pretty well. So back in November of 2018, I entered into one of those episodes and it didn't really end like the other ones had. So I stopped sleeping, my hair was falling out, I stopped eating, I wasn't really able to function. And I was able to stay out of the hospital for a while and just, they played with my medication, they adjusted my medication, they gave me more outpatient supports. And so that was really helping and I was doing pretty well. And then in March of 2020, the pandemic hit. Mm. And all of my doctors and therapists weren't seeing people in person anymore. They were not even doing video calls. They were just doing like phone calls. Mm. And it was harder to get in contact with them, I had less appointments, less support, and I wasn't far enough into recovery at that point that I could deal with it on my own. So I really started to backslide a lot, and I decided that I'm a total control freak. And you know, we didn't know back in March, April, May of 2020, like what was gonna happen. The world was so different, and it was like it changed overnight, and nothing was in my control. So I decided that the only thing that could be in my control was how and when I was going to die. So I made my plans, I got organized, I, you know, did all the preparations that I needed. But before I went through with it, I thought to myself, well, I'm gonna go to the hospital, and if they don't admit me, or if I don't feel better when I come out, then, you know, I won't waste any time. I will take my life. And obviously it didn't happen that way. I figured I would go to the ER and they'd be like, oh, you're fine, go home. And then, you know, I wasn't really hopeful of getting better at that point. I was more seeking absolution so that when I was gone, my family and friends would think that I had tried. But I mean, obviously things took a different turn because I was admitted.
Yeah, before we get there, I just want to just touch on a few of these points that you've just mentioned, because it really, really sticks. And sometimes people, a lot of the times, and I'm sure you found the same thing, people try to help and try to understand, you know, oh, just stop thinking this way, just stop feeling that way. Like, did you hear those things from people?
Yes, all the time. And it's like, well, nobody wants to feel like this. If we could change it, we would.
Right. And sometimes that pushes you even further in, because you might think, well, everybody's telling me just to do it. Why can't I just do it? Right. Yes. And you become deeper in that hole that you're in. Yeah. But so 2018 is when you started really going into this, a different stage of depression. And then 2020, when you went to the hospital. But starting from a young age, do you know at this point in your life what were some of those contributing factors to your depression?
I think a lot of it was, well, some of it was family complications. My dad was diagnosed with cancer, so he was going through treatment, and then he left actually when I was 6. And I think at that point too, I had started to realize that people were treating me differently because I was blind. And, you know, up till a certain age, you don't really notice that you're different. And, you know, I would hang out with my brother and my cousins and everything would just be normal. But then I kind of got to school and people started treating me differently, and adults started treating me differently as well. And I think I was really sensitive to that. So that increased my anxiety, because I was anxious that they would be anxious, I guess, and I just wanted everybody to be comfortable.
Right. Yeah, going to school, I was thinking when you said that age, I'm like, oh, that's the age when you start really realizing how mean kids really are.
Yes, they can be, for sure.
And I'm sorry that you had to go through that. And you started feeling like they were treating you different, and they probably were. It probably wasn't all in your head. I'm assuming that, because, you know, I've lived a long enough time to see that kids really do act out in ways that are inappropriate and really can harm a person.
Yeah, so, yeah, that stuff sticks. Like, I think people don't realize how long you can carry some of those things.
Yeah, and sometimes you don't even realize you're carrying it until something just happens, or a trigger or something, right? And like you said, you had good days, so it wasn't always terrible. Like, you know, you had some, you know, I'm using quotation marks with my fingers here, like good days, like good times, whatever that means to each person is different, of course. So you went through your teenage years. Did you date during your teenage years? Were you?
Yeah.
You were able to date, because sometimes during those moments and those seasons of depression, you don't even want to deal with that sort of thing.
Yeah, no, like I remember kind of, I would going through a relationship and I'd kind of be in a better place, and then I'd be in a not so good place, and I would, you know, usually end it because I just want it to be alone.
Yes. So when you decided, okay, I'm going to do this. I'm going to prepare myself. I'm going to put everything in order. And for those out there listening and watching this, if you've never experienced something like this, it might kind of seem over the top, or maybe your heart can't grasp the severity of this, but I'm telling you, it is some of the most devastating times in a person's life when you're preparing to say goodbye to people and on your own doing. So for you to prepare and put things in place, that's a painful, painful place to be, Heather.
Yes.
That's a dark, lonely place.
It was.
And so you go to the hospital, you're like, I'm just going to go so that they can't be too angry with me. And at least they'll say, well, she tried everything and it was just too much for her.
Yes, exactly.
That's a lot of forethought.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah. And it, you know, it might not seem logical to people who haven't been through it, but I kind of want to, you know, discuss those dark days so that people do kind of, it's this like mystery if you haven't been through it.
Yes.
And I want people to kind of understand what it is like and what the thought processes are like, even though, you know, it might not make a lot of sense. You know, when I'm doing better, it doesn't really make that much sense to me even, so.
Right. It's true. It's so true. So you get to the hospital, you thought they were just going to say, okay, let's change your medicine, or you're okay, just go home, take a deep breath, take a hot bath, whatever.
Yeah.
But they didn't.
They didn't.
So what happened next?
So my first meeting was with one of the crisis nurses, and she kind of said to me, okay, we're going to wait, we're going to page an ER doctor, and we're going to see what she wants to do. Because I think this is a common misconception too, and I guess it does depend on the province or the state, wherever you are. But people often think that like a family member can have you committed into psychiatric care. That's not true. It has to be a form that's filled out by a physician. So we had to wait for this doctor to come. While that's all going on, I'm actually in a separate part of the hospital in the emergency room. But there's a special part that's actually locked where people suffering acute mental health crises are held, I guess, until they kind of can either find placement for them or release them. So waited a couple hours, talked to her, answered, you know, a bunch of questions. She kind of did the, you know, the whole check risk assessment and everything. And she said, no, you're going to be admitted for tonight, and you'll talk to the psychiatrist in the morning. So she had to fill out all the initial paperwork, which basically allowed them to keep me for 48 hours without my consent.
Right.
Initially for 48 hours. They can extend that.
Did they extend it with you?
Yes.
And how long were you in there for? Wow, that's a long time.
It was, yeah. I think a lot of people are like, oh, that's not very long, but in, especially in Canada, because our healthcare system is public, they practically push you out the door while you're still waiting sometimes. So yeah, like 9 days in a hospital in Canada kind of is a long time.
It's a very long time in this country. So when you go in, you think, okay. And then they're like, well, we're just going to keep you in this assessment room for a moment. And, okay, we're going to keep you overnight. Like, were you like, okay, I'll just be here one night? Like, what were your thoughts?
Yeah, I was just biding my time. I was like, well, this is kind of inconvenient, but it's fine. I'll get out soon.
And then day after day after day, what were your conversations like?
Yeah, so I got moved from PEZ, which is psychiatric emergency services, to the IPU, which is inpatient psychiatric unit. And so I was having really intensive therapy. I would meet with a psychiatrist once a day, and then the psychiatric nurses also work as counselors. So you have kind of these short little almost impromptu sessions with them. Like you can have 5, 10, 15 a day. So they really kind of break it up so that you're constantly getting that reinforcement and that help to work on healthier habits. And for me, like it didn't happen overnight. I was still just really waiting and waiting, biding my time. And then one night, somebody was brought in by air ambulance in critical condition, and they got to the hospital and they immediately called a code blue. And I'm lying in my bed, you know, listening to all this going on and thinking to myself, God, this person's poor family, they must be having one of the scariest nights of their life. And I kind of stopped and went, well, how can I feel so much compassion for their loved ones when I know the decision I want to make will devastate my own? And I realized that this person was fighting to live as I was fighting to die. And that I was the one that had a choice to make. So in that moment, it was like, okay, I have a choice. I can, and I need to make it now. I can live, or I can wait to get out of here, and I can die. And the thought, honestly, of anybody else going through that and feeling that much pain, for me, was the most painful part of the whole thing. So I just thought to myself, no, I need to get better. I need to leave the hospital, and I need to write this book and tell my story.
Oh my gosh, that's powerful.
Yeah, it was such a wake up call.
Yes, like that is extreme. I mean, you know how powerful it is, but me listening to you, that is extremely powerful, because here's the thing. Even though you're waiting and you're biding your time, day after day is going by, now a week has gone by, and you're still thinking, okay, this is all good and dandy, but you know, I'm still going to probably do this when I'm out of here. And then this gift of empathy comes upon you when you were thinking about somebody else's family. And it's so funny how we can disassociate when we're going through things. And so you sort of did that in your own life. You disassociated yourself, your family, your own emotions, your own empathy towards self, but you had it for somebody else, and that was a wake-up call.
Yes.
Oh, extremely powerful stuff, Heather. And then you're like, wow, okay, I have a choice. And sometimes when we're in the pit of our despair, that choice feels like it's non-existent. Like, I have no choice. I can't do this anymore. I don't want to feel this way anymore. And the only option is out, right? That's the only choice we have. And you were there, and all of a sudden, you're not there.
Yeah.
You feel this, I have a choice. I'm not orating it properly, because I'm stunned. I'm shocked with that gift of empathy that you were given at that moment. And I call it a gift of empathy, because I think that's truly what it is. And that's what saved your life.
That's a good way to put it, yeah.
I think that's what saved your life, and I'm so grateful for that. Okay, and you made the decision. So did you talk to somebody and say, hey, this is what's happening now? Or like, how did you fix that? I don't want to say fix, that's a terrible word. How did you like maneuver through that?
Yeah, I don't think I really had like that much of a conversation with anybody about it. I think I talked to the psychiatrist after and kind of said, oh, it made me feel anxious listening to what was happening with that person, because, you know, I felt like I couldn't help or whatever. But I don't know that I ever really had a conversation specifically with anybody about it. I just started like actually trying and being involved in my treatment plan and just really working, because it's not like this, you know, 180 where all of a sudden, oh, everything's fine because you have this like epiphany. No, there's like so many habits and ways of thinking and stuff that you have to adjust. So in a way, that wake up call was like the beginning of the actual really, really, really hard part and the hard work to get back to, you know, some semblance of a normal living person.
Yeah, that's like, that was your wake-up call, and that's when the work started.
Yes.
And it was interesting for me to learn this about you, that so you've been with your partner for over 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously you had your partner with you at this time.
Yeah.
How was he? Like, how did that happen in your relationship? How did that affect him and your relationship with him?
Yeah, that's a really good question, because I think people don't often really think about the, you know, the unintended casualties that go
right.
down with a person who's struggling with their, you know, with any kind of mental illness, because usually the people are, you know, the people closest to you
right.
who suffer with you. So it was really, really hard for him. He didn't know what to do. He didn't know how to help before.
Mm-hmm.
He's like really a doer, so it was very like distressing for him that he was trying to find answers to solutions that solutions to problems that just didn't exist.
Right. And at that moment, there really is no solution for him.
No.
Right. He would have been just, I'm going to, this is a cruel word to say, but it was almost useless, because all the decisions and choices were on you.
Yes.
What you were going to do. And he just had to wait, and in pain too, I'm sure, because he loves you.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And they actually let him come with me. Usually they don't or didn't because of COVID, but they actually let him wait with me so he could escort me. So
right.
he was actually in that first psych unit and sat with me for a couple hours until I was like officially admitted. So he saw, you know, what it was like in there, which I think, you know, was so devastating, because he had to get up afterwards and walk away. And I just remember sitting there, and he stood up and walked out the door, and it was like this automatically locking heavy metal door. So just the sound of like it closing and the little like electronic lock engaging as he was gone, and it was just like things got really real.
Yeah.
It was like, okay, no matter what happens here, I've reached the end of a road.
Wow. Yes. It's almost like a movie. I can see it playing out in my head. Like, I can hear it. You've described it very well. So you mentioned earlier you needed to write a book to show your experiences, to let it out.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll get to that in 1 second, but because you're a singer-songwriter, do you feel your music helped you recuperate, like come through and walk you through this journey?
Absolutely. And maybe not so much when I was going through that, because I was so sick at that point that I wasn't playing any music. I had no interest in it. I wasn't performing. I wasn't even playing music for myself. Like, I was just,
right.
you know, as dead as somebody could be while they're still, you know, living relatively healthily and breathing and everything. I was just, everything that made me was gone. But certainly before that, yeah, like music has always been something that kind of pulls me out of what I'm dealing with, and I would credit it for saving me on a number of occasions before then, when I was just ready to give up, and then I would get like these opportunities to play music with really awesome people and record and things like that, and that would kind of bring me back.
Nice. And what happened after you got out of the hospital? Have you been actively pursuing or engaging in your music and your singing?
Yeah, it actually took a while, because I was so focused on like, okay, I have to get my story down and,
right.
and out here before, like, because I really wanted the hospital parts especially to be really fresh in my mind when I was writing them down. So yeah, I was really focused on that, but I actually have been writing, and I actually, all of today, I just spent in the studio for recording a new album, so. Oh,
wonderful. And what's the name of your book?
Holding On by Letting Go.
Oh, see, that's a powerful title. Holding On While Letting Go. And when you're talking about your life, holding on
mm-hmm.
to your life and just letting go of everything else, that's powerful.
Yeah, yeah, it's surrendering but not giving up.
Yes, surrendering but not giving up. Wow. I think Heather, you're going to, just the words you use and the descriptions you use, really, I believe so many people are going to benefit from what you have to say and the words you've penned in that book. I think people are going to be able to associate very well. People who've been there, people who are in it, going through it now, even more importantly, because the ones who are in it now may not know that they have a choice to come out.
Exactly.
And I think your book is going to really inspire people. And that's awesome. And yes. And you're singing and songwriting. So is your partner, he's a musician as well?
Yes, he is.
Do you sing together or do you play together? Like, who's the, because you're a singer.
Yeah. So he will sometimes sing harmonies. He plays guitar. I actually met him in the recording studio. I hired him to play on one of my albums.
Oh,
and
nice.
He was playing bass back then. But as, you know, kind of the music industry has gotten more complicated over the past number of years, and it's harder to hire like a band. So we've been doing like, or I guess before COVID, we were doing a lot of like duo shows. So he would be on the guitar and harmonies, and I would be singing and playing piano.
Oh my goodness, that's beautiful. So we're going to put that up there too, where people can go and find your music and download, because you're on everywhere, right? You're on Spotify, you're on Apple Music, you're all over, right?
Yes.
Definitely. And so we'll have that out. What's the name of your latest single?
Where the Ocean Meets the Sand.
Oh, that's beautiful too. I don't know what it is tonight that everything you're saying is just so powerful.
That's awesome.
Like a gushing little girl or something. I'm like, oh my gosh, that is so powerful. But it's true.
Oh, thank you.
The right words, the right descriptions, like holding on while letting go, where the ocean meets the sand. They're just so powerful.
You.
Yeah, I love that. And so where can people find you when to go find the book? Where is the book so they can go and get this?
The book is pretty much everywhere on Amazon, Apple Books, Audible as an audiobook.
Oh, good.
Barnes & Noble on their website, Chapters on their website. It's available in print, ebook, and audiobook.
That's amazing. Thank you for that. And I can't wait to read it. And I can't wait to download your music. I was going to do it before the show. And I'm like, no. I want to do it after, because I just want, I had heard the one song.
Yeah.
And oh my gosh, like I already told you, it was like angelic. And so I'm like, I got to go get it all. But I really want to do it with my listeners.
Yeah.
Like I want us to experience it together. So I thought that would be kind of cool. Yeah, so we can find you anywhere books are sold, find your music wherever downloadable music is, and what's next for you?
What's next? I think, well, this next album that we're working on now, so it's kind of a bit of a different process, partly because of COVID. I think people realize like how much work we actually can do at home, so it's it's really different for me. Usually I come into the studio and I have everything like ready to go, all the musicians' parts. I know exactly what I'm doing. And this, we're just kind of letting it happen more organically, which is kind of cool. It's kind of stressful because I'm not used to working like that. But,
yeah,
you know, it's changing it up a little bit. So hopefully, you know, I come up with something different in a different way, because, you know, you don't want to be doing the same thing always. So yeah, so we're working on that, and I'm hoping that once it's released I can do a bit of a tour, but different than anything I've done in the past. I'm hoping to be able to share my story like in words and kind of augment it with music. So kind of this whole presentation about mental health, about, you know, diversity and inclusion and all those things, just really like ornamented with my own original music.
Yes. I would encourage you, you might have thought about it already, to check out TEDx or TED Talk, one of the, you know.
Yeah. I'm so like nervous to even look into that, but like I feel like it'd be so, because, you know, nobody, there's not like that back and forth, right? You just like have to talk.
It's true.
God,
it's true.
I don't know.
But it's a powerful stage for people to hear your message.
Yes.
Yeah. And your message needs to be heard.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, that's always the goal, you know, to support people who are going through it and to educate people who maybe have a family member or whatever going through it and just can't really understand what's going on.
Yes, I agree. Well, thank you for that. I thank you for, you know, just choosing life. I thank you for choosing life. And I know your future, it's not always going to be easy, because these are things that it takes time. And sometimes we stumble and we just have to get back up and remember that we chose life. And so I'm grateful that you chose life. I'm grateful for your music. I'm grateful for your book. And I can't wait to hear more. And, you know, keep in contact and let me know when things are happening so I can help promote it for you.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Heather, for being brave enough to tell your story.
Thank you for having me on and giving me the chance to tell my story.
Thank you. And for my listeners, as always, I am grateful that you choose to tune in and listen and watch. And as I always say, make sure you subscribe, download, tweet, like, send a pigeon, whatever it is, make sure you tell everybody that they should be listening to This Is Your City. Stay safe and stay blessed. Ciao.
Take my hand and walk with me a lifetime.